New clues in the Brian Laundrie investigation. We are revisiting the most crucial locations connected to the case and hearing from some important new witnesses. Did the police miss something in Utah? And was there really a restaurant fight in Wyoming? We'll answer those questions and more. Plus, the sheriff speaks while the assistant director lawyers up. Are there roadblocks in the Alec Baldwin movie investigation that left a crew member dead? All ahead on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield, as the makeshift memorial to Gabby Petito is loaded into a Northport City truck and hauled off from the Laundrie's front lawn. New questions surface and red flags are raised in other parts of the country. News Nation's Brian Enten is currently visiting the most important locations connected to this case, following in the final tragic footsteps of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. But fortunately for us, Brian Enten is able to stop down on the trip and share with us what he has learned on this trip. Brian, thank you. I know you're in Grand Teton tonight. You must be exhausted from all of the work you've compiled over the last few days. First and foremost, situate me as to why you are standing where you are, and then who you've talked to along the way, generally speaking.
So, yeah, we are in Grand Teton right now. You can see the big sign behind me. I mean, it's pitch black out here. It's a national park, you know, that goes on for thousands and thousands of acres. So it's very, very dark tonight. But we're basically ending our journey here because very close to where we stand now is where Gabby Petito's body was discovered. And later on in the show, we're going to show you that area. Super interesting and surreal to be there. And there were so many things that went through my mind being there that I didn't realize until I saw it for myself today. So we're going to get into that later. We also were in Jackson, Wyoming, where Gabby and Brian were at a restaurant. We're going to talk to you about that. Also Salt Lake City, where Gabby stayed behind when Brian went home to Florida on that trip. And then Moab, of course, where there was the domestic incident and the body camera video. So we're going to walk you through it all, and I'll explain it all to you, Ashley.
Okay, and before we get to this journey of yours, I want to actually just catapult everyone back to Florida, because there was a development today, and I think it left a real pit in a lot of people's stomach. I'll show some of the video of it, but that memorial that's been on the corner of the Laundrie's front lawn and has remained, for the most part, untouched, was touched. And it was upsetting to see what was happening. This is the video here. This is a Northport city worker in a Northport city truck picking it all up and dumping it in the back of the truck, basically hauling it off, Brian. And I assume this is a surprise to you because it stayed there every single day that you were there.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me to see that this just suddenly happened. I kind of wondered at what point would something like this happen, being out there for so long, wondering, you know, were the neighbors going to complain, were the laundries going to make a call. And you remember, Ashley, early on, there was that police worker that was out there in that pickup truck telling people not to leave stuff on the grass. So there's sort of been this thing with the city for a while. We've got this feeling like they didn't like that the signs were popping up there along the road in front of the Laundrie's house.
Sad to see some of the flowers that they're collecting seem fresh. And these are, you know, obviously brought in the recent days by people who wanted to memorialize Gabby, probably send a message to the Laundrie's, but also, you know, pay their respects in the only place maybe that was close enough for them to pay their respects. The place where she lived. It was her home, let's remember. Not just the Laundrie's home. It was also Gabby's home. I think that gets forgotten in a lot of this. You know, it's interesting. You know, if you think about the dichotomy of how they memorialized Gabby, Brian, the city had a huge memorial, and, you know, Gabby's parents were actually even there. They were able to take some things home. They were able to look through it. They were able to see the messages, and it was very special. They thought these things were important enough to keep. And here's some of the video of them wrapping things up and protecting them, and it seemed very ceremonious compared to what we just saw, and that was very unceremonious, into the back of the pickup truck. I think the only thing that might have been worse is if it were just a garbage truck, but it felt the same.
Yeah, and you remember there was that memorial near Northport City Hall that was very, very large, and people were able to go there and leave things. The city sort of shut that down, too, and boxed everything up. And when you were talking about the memorial outside the Laundrie's house being taken away, I was thinking, you know, gosh, if they still had that other memorial, at least there would still be a place in Northport for people to go and leave things and to gather and to talk. But now that memorial is also gone, and there's just been so many people showing up to Northport, domestic violence survivors. I mean, people who are you know, wanting to go there to express emotion and have been touched by the case. Now it sort of feels like they may not have a place to do that, at least at this point. Of course, there is a plan, they say, for a more permanent memorial, a bench near the city hall, but that just hasn't happened yet.
Well, that would be awfully nice. I will give people the official statement. It's the reason why you saw that video. And if it felt uncomfortable to you, here is the reason. And it's from the city. Ahead of the severe weather today, the city of Northport has received several complaints about signs posted on Wabasso Avenue. Per city sign code and storm water code, these signs are in violation and are not allowed in the road right of way. And it, strangely enough, the person who actually released that statement, I kind of thought it'd be some, you know, paper pusher from the town. Nope, it was Josh Taylor, being called the city spokesman. He's also the police spokesperson. I guess the question I have for you, Brian, is it's been weeks and there's been rain. There have been storms, but nobody, you know, came and collected it because of storm problems. And when they say there have been several complaints, the neighbors were some of the people who came and brought things to that memorial.
Yeah, most of the neighbors, at least that we spoke to while we were basically camped outside the house for 6 weeks, were supportive of the memorial. I didn't hear very many complaints about it. I'll tell you, in the last week or two, there were, it almost felt like it was becoming a little more permanent. There were people who put lights in front of it that would light it up at night. And I would imagine, I mean, technically it probably does violate some sort of code in the city to have signs like that near the street. But I sort of suspected that the city would just sort of let it be for a while, again, because it's a sensitive thing for so many people.
It is very sensitive. And I just think about that beautiful picture that we can just see there. She's smiling, you know, towards this camera here in that cutout of her. It just breaks my heart to think that someone's just going to be probably tossing that into the trash. It's just really heartbreaking. You know, what I wanted to do was just remind everyone how, you know, how things have really played out on that lawn with regard to those who wanted to make a statement. Because it's been in myriad ways, right? We have seen, let's start with the flower bombing that began, Brian. I think you noticed it right away. All of a sudden, floral arrangements were ordered to that home. And one after the other, they were sent there with messages, most of the messages to Gabby, as if to say to the Laundrie's, yeah, she lived there. That is her home, and we do want to send some flowers. And they didn't move them. They just kind of left them on the front porch there. But there were so many other ways. I want to just sort of play the compilation of what we witnessed of memorializing Gabby Petito on that front lawn. Take a look at this.
What does it say? Where are y'all from?
Across the street.
Hi. What if it was Cassie? What would they do? They'd probably do a little better than what they're doing now.
Is there anything you want to say to Brian, sir? If he's watching, is there anything you want to say? Is there anything you want people to know?
Let me do it.
Is there a reason the FBI thinks you're not telling the truth? Do you know where Brian's passport is? Do you have anything to say about Gabby? A lot of the neighbors think you guys know more than you're saying. They're dropped off the sign. They want you to know that they're concerned that you guys know more than you're saying.
Brian, that was not the last of it. One of the last images that I recall was that from the women who had come all the way from Minnesota. They flew all the way from Minnesota. They had a sign that they wanted to hammer into the lawn as well. And the reason that they did that was because they said that they had a very profound feeling regarding the domestic abuse story that had played out. And they wanted to let the Laundries know that they had a say. They felt the journey all the way from Minnesota was important, and you can see Mr. Laundry taking that sign away. But if the sign said, you could just see bits and pieces of it, what if this happened to Cassie? So clearly they wanted that message to be heard loud and clear by the Laundries, and they wanted to say this was upsetting to them, that the Laundries did not help the Petitos in the effort to find Gabby. So let's move from the memorial and sort of the history of how they've memorialized, and that is to the investigation that continues, including where you are. It is not over where you are. The case is not closed where you are. And so far, no one has even called Gabby's killing a murder. It is still just a homicide. So there's still more to come from Wyoming.
Oh, absolutely. And this is still the hub of the investigation. Yes, there's a lot going on in Florida, obviously, but the FBI office in this part of the country is in control of this investigation, and they are the ones running things. And still, up until now, and we talked about this the other night, they have still not come out and said that Brian Laundry killed Gabby Petito. This is still under investigation, and a lot of people, us included, are waiting for the press conference or the memo or however they decide to do it to say, look, this is the evidence we have, and we're going to now make this connection.
Yeah, the family deserves to know the entire story. And I think the public really just wants to know the entire story. They feel very drawn to Gabby and now the family's cause, the Gabby Petito Foundation cause. I'm going to give you that address in a little bit. In the meantime, though, so the investigation up there has yet to wrap up and close and sort of spill out all of its, you know, work product, right? They will never be able to call Brian Laundry a murderer because you cannot charge, try, and convict a dead man, and that's the only way you can establish an actual murder. So that's not going to be satisfying to a lot of people. But in the, you know, back in the southeast in Florida, the investigation's continuing there as well. The FBI is continuing to question what happened, and that involves the, you know, the Laundries and whether they had any involvement as well. And the notebook. Because if that man wrote something in that notebook, it could answer all the questions. Do we have anything further on the notebook? It's day 7.
I know that really is like the number one question on Twitter, I would say, from people, is everybody, including me. I mean, we all want to know what's inside that notebook. We haven't gotten any updates since yesterday. Latest again, and I'll just repeat myself, is police say they do believe there's something legible in it. They think they'll be able to salvage it. But beyond that, we haven't heard anything. And you mentioned the investigation continuing in Florida. I keep thinking back to your interview, that intense interview with Mr. Bertolino. There were so many new nuggets in that interview. But the part where he talked about, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he said like unresolved issues, or he's still working out things with the FBI and there were still meetings set up and that kind of thing. So this is all still very much active.
And I was fascinated to learn that the FBI and Mr. Bertolino had been speaking up until and after the 13th of September, which is when Brian went on his walkabout never to return. So they were having conversations with the FBI. Perhaps the pressure was on. Perhaps that was some reason that spurred Brian to take his fatal walk. If it was intended, who knows, but it sure seems that way by all accounts. But it is fascinating to think about the things that were said and done, and eventually will the FBI be able to tell the public? We pay the salaries. We pay for the work product. Eventually, it's helpful for the public to know that things don't happen in a vacuum and that we do get resolution in our criminal justice process. Otherwise, we could live in, you know, other countries that just put, you know, dark hoods over you and throw you in a gulag. That's what justice looks like elsewhere. We're very transparent in this country, and it would be good to know, you know, just what they've been able to uncover and what they haven't. All right, Brian Anton, I'm going to go to break, but you can't go anywhere because you're everything. You're everything to me, Brian, and to our viewers as well. I'm just going to tell you that. So, okay, next up, Brian, we're going to take a critical look at the moment of Gabby and Brian's cross-country van trip, that run-in with the police in Moab, Utah. You know, Brian Anton went to the site where this happened. He went with the Moab police, and it really shows an entirely different perspective than that single solitary view you've had from the body camera shots. So was there something that they missed? Was there something we all missed? And would it have made a difference in the way Gabby's life played out? And I promised you this, and I'm going to deliver it right now. If you want to learn more about what Gabby Petito's family is doing to help other missing people and victims of domestic violence, there you have it. Visit GabbyPetitoFoundation.org. And we are back in just a few. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Brian Laundrie investigation. News Nation's Brian Anton has been retracing the couple's final movements, visiting all the sites and talking with the witnesses who saw and interacted with Gabby and Brian all along the way, especially in Moab, Utah. And there is something to be said for a little bit of space and a little bit of time when you're trying to piece together details of what happened. Brian Anton is still with me. So, Brian, this has to do with that infamous, now infamous body cam video. And everybody's been, you know, they've sort of seen it over and over and over again from one perspective. And that's the perspective of the body cam that's being worn on the police officers' chests. But I want to take people back to where you started in Moab, and that was at the Moonflower Co-op. That's where the witness called 911, and this happened. Take a look.
We drove by, and the gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
Okay, you said it's a white van?
White van. I give you the license plate. Just give me one sec.
So, Brian, did anyone at the Moonflower Cafe co-op have any additional perspective on that moment? Because so much of it rests on what that guy said, that he was slapping her.
The simple answer is no. And that's what surprised me about the co-op and about many of the places in Moab, is that people did not want to talk about the Gabby Petito incident. This is a small town. Smaller than I realized before getting there. Sort of everyone knows everyone. It's a tourist town. Some people told me they were concerned about the image of the town. People sort of now associate Moab with this incident. But again, no one from the co-op wanted to talk. They wouldn't provide surveillance video. And the other interesting thing is a lot of these places right there where that incident happened next to the co-op don't even have surveillance cameras, which kind of surprised me coming from a big city. But when you go into some of these smaller towns, and the assistant police chief told me the same thing, like a lot of these places don't have Ring cameras. They don't have surveillance cameras. It's just not a standard thing like other places.
Okay, so Brian, the next thing I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask our control room to just roll some of the pictures from that, from that domestic violence stop, and I call it that because that's what it was called in as, and we're very familiar with the pictures as we look at them. We've seen them a lot, but it's very, very different when you're there, and I want you to give people a perspective that they can be thinking of as they look at these pictures now, from that initial stop. Given what you've seen, having actually stood in the same spot where Gabby is standing right now on our screen.
Right. So the interesting thing is where the call came in, where the altercation, the domestic incident happened outside the Moonflower Co-op is not anywhere near where the stop happened. It's quite a ways away in the national park outside Moab. After the incident, after the call came in, they left in the van and they made it out of town to the national park. And that is when the police were finally able to catch up with them and pull them over right there in the national park. That was some, I didn't understand how great the distance was between the two. That was something that was really striking to me.
So there had been some time in the white van for this couple to discuss, talk, say whatever was said. Maybe Brian said something to Gabby as they were being pulled over. We have no idea. But it certainly does give you some perspective to know that there was a lot of time for conversation and for direction, let's just say, as they were being followed by the police. It wasn't instantaneous. So it's very interesting. One other thing I wanted to ask you about is what the police told you, because first of all, I was shocked that they took you there. You got these pictures of them driving you to the location. When you had the chance to talk with them, especially right there on the scene, what struck you about how they are reflective of the incident?
Well, so the first thing I want to say is there's a lot that they would not talk about because this incident is being investigated. Their officers are being investigated by an outside agency that is going to decide whether or not the officers handled the situation correctly. So the assistant chief was very clear that this is an open investigation. It's an internal affairs investigation. He can't talk about whether he thinks what the officers did is right or wrong. But once we sat down with him, he did say, you know, they want to learn from this situation. They've had additional training, domestic violence training. They're open to any sort of findings that come out of this investigation. And look, we've all watched the video over and over again, and it's hard to watch. And there was even a point, I think, where the assistant chief became emotional talking to me. So, you know, this has been a difficult time for them, too.
That's really interesting. Okay, just lastly, this was something I don't think I had seen before, but the video, the body cam video, continued to the hotel where they said Brian had to spend the night in order to separate Gabby and Brian. So I just want to play a snippet of that, and then I want to ask you about it on the other side. So take a look. This is Brian being checked into that hotel right after that body cam video that you just saw.
Tyson? Officer Robin still called for me?
He did, yes.
This is Brian Laundrie.
I didn't even know that existed. So naturally, you, of course, went to the hotel. And what did they tell you?
Yeah, that's how we knew to go to that motel, because we zeroed right in on that part of the body cam. And again, it was sort of another frustrating dead end. Went into the motel. Basically, I was told that the person who checked Brian Laundrie in was sort of a seasonal employee and has now gone back to college and wasn't able to talk. And then also that there was no surveillance video. Again, no surveillance video at all available. So, you know, I really wanted to find out, did Brian Laundrie actually stay the night in the motel? Is there a chance that Brian and Gabby were together again sooner than what we thought? But again, we hit dead ends there. There was no video, and the person that worked there is now gone.
Gosh, just unbelievable. Okay, Brian, don't go anywhere. We're going to squeeze in another very quick break, but afterwards, we're going to continue retracing Gabby and Brian's final moments. After that Moab incident with police, Gabby and Brian continued their journey to Jackson, Wyoming, where witnesses say they saw the couple fighting inside a restaurant there.
She was hysterically crying, and she walked out, and she was crying, and she was staying on the sidewalk, and I was watching the whole thing unfold.
It was the last time that Gabby was ever seen alive, but did we all get it wrong? Was there something else that happened at the restaurant? Brian Enten was there, and he got some other perspectives face-to-face. We're going to check them out, question them next. And again, to learn more about what Gabby Petito's family is doing to help other missing people and victims of domestic violence, please visit GabbyPetitoFoundation.org. All August 27th is an important day in the lives of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. Maybe the most important day. It's quite possibly the day that Gabby died. It's apparently the day she was last seen alive in public, and it was memorable. According to witnesses and restaurant staff, Gabby and Brian had lunch at the Mary Piglet's restaurant in Jackson, Wyoming. It happened in the afternoon, but it was certainly not a happy occasion.
We were at this restaurant, you guys, Friday, August 27th, 1 p.m., sitting right next to them. They got kicked out of the restaurant and were fighting with the hostess. They were fighting with the hostess. She was hysterically crying, and she walked out, and she was crying, and she was staying on the sidewalk, and I was watching the whole thing unfold. And he walked back in the restaurant, and he's fighting with the hostess. And I didn't know what happened. I don't even know if they got kicked out, but they like left abruptly. And like she was standing on the sidewalk crying, and he walked back in and was like screaming at the hostess, and then walked back out. And then he walked back in like four more times to talk to the manager and to like tell the hostess off.
So, Brian Enten, this is important. You visited the Mary Piglet's restaurant just in the last 2 days. And I want you to, if you can, characterize for me the conversation that you had with the manager of that restaurant.
So this was just last night, Ashley. This was right before they closed. I mean, we were on your show last night. We were driving like all the way from Moab to here and stopped in Salt Lake. So we were like trying to get here right before they closed. We got there right before they closed. The manager and the staff were all inside sort of together, like kind of talking right before closing. And I went inside and I spoke with the manager, immediately told her who I was. And she immediately said, like, what you've heard about what happened here is not what really happened. She didn't want to go on camera, but take a look.
She says everything that's been on the news about what happened here is made up. She says there was no loud voices, no one got angry, no one threw a fit here, but she says that Gabby and Brian did leave the restaurant without paying, and she says that the server followed them outside, that they paid the bill out here on the street, and that Brian was very calm, but then that they came back into the restaurant together, and that Gabby said that she wanted her money back, and the restaurant said that we're not going to give you your money back, and that then Gabby and Brian left.
Yeah, so I had Luis, my photographer, shoot that because I wanted to, like, get it out right away because I had just heard her explain all of this. But it was interesting because it was so different than the other witness account. And I told the manager that, and she's like, yeah, it's not true. That's not what happened. She goes, it was all a very somewhat calm situation in her words.
You know, it's so interesting. And this is where I'm so glad that, you know, early in my professional career, I was a waitress and a bartender and a bouncer. 6 years of it. So I know intimately the functioning of a restaurant. And I also know that oftentimes the manager's not there for everything. So I am quite, and I also love covering trials where many witnesses bring their story to the stand and give a fulsome picture of what happened. And one witness's account isn't always the same. And sometimes they're contiguous. So I'm very curious as to whether that Instagrammer Nina Seely saw something that the manager didn't see, because if the manager only thinks that was a walkout on a check, there may very well have been something quite aggressive happening next to Nina's table, as she seems very certain of what she witnessed. So I'm not prepared to sort of discount the Instagrammer. I think that there could be many different versions of what it looked like to them, but certainly the same version that comes from everybody is that Gabby was upset, that's for sure. Okay, just quickly, I want to take you back for a minute to the Salt Lake City Hotel. I know I'm circling back, but I think it's an important moment because there is video of Gabby leaving that hotel, and it's important to know all the places where she was seen on video. But characterize for me why that's important.
It's important because that is where Brian left Gabby when he returned home to Florida to apparently clean out this storage unit. And so that was another one of the stops that we made, hoping to get some information because, you know, that's kind of one of the mysteries. What was Gabby doing during that time? What was happening? And again, it was just sort of immediate shutdown. The manager and the clerk knew why we were there, said that they couldn't talk. There was a restaurant attached that we sort of thought, well, perhaps Gabby ate there because she was at this hotel alone for so long. So we also went to the restaurant, and I think the manager called ahead and kind of warned them that we were coming. And so they also just immediately shut us down. So we didn't really gain any insight into, we know Gabby was there, but we don't know much more than that still.
Okay, Brian, don't go away. The most solemn, honestly, the most solemn stop on the journey of the, you know, that you've just been through had to be where they eventually found Gabby. And there were some messages there that you have discovered, messages for her. And so we're going to check in with you and find out what you saw. That's coming next. On August 24th, Nicole Schmidt got something absolutely every mother loves, and that's a FaceTime call from her daughter who was traveling. That daughter was Gabby Petito, and that FaceTime was the last time that Nicole ever laid eyes on her. Gabby had called her to say that she and her fiancé, Brian Laundry, were leaving Utah and heading to the beautiful Teton Mountain Range in Wyoming. We know they made it there because, as remote as it is, their white van was caught on video. It turns out the Spread Creek campground was on the itinerary of YouTubers Red, White, and Bethune as well, who drove right by Gabby and Brian's van.
As we're coming up on it, we're approaching it up here on the left-hand side. This is most definitely Gabby Petito's Ford Transit van. It's kind of wild, like it's sane a little bit, because we drove past, we actually weren't able to find any sites, and we ended up driving back through, saw it again, but here it is on the left. So.
And I slowed it down so you can possibly see it a little bit better.
It is actually almost eerie to see out that driver's side window as Bethune passes right by that white van. Because at the time, it, you know, really meant nothing. And now, it means everything. That parking spot was confirmed to be close to the site where Gabby's remains were found. News Nation's Brian Enten has made the exact same trip to the exact same spot, seen for himself if there were clues that we may have missed, things that we may have overlooked, and he's live in Grand Teton Park, Wyoming. So, Brian, now that we've got that perspective of where the van was parked and that it's fairly close to the site of the remains, you took the trip from that parking spot to the remains on foot. I want you to just sort of tell me about it and then show me your journey.
Well, first of all, Ashley, we actually used that YouTube blogger's video to find the spot. Like, I was holding the video, and we were looking at the trees, and the time of year is different. There's not as much greenery, but we used the video to find where the van was, and then I knew that the place where the body was about 1,000 feet out into the right. So we went out there, and it's farther than you think. That's the first thing that really struck me. It's not that close, and you have to go through two small creeks and then a small river and actually get wet to get to it. But take a look. It's a bit of a trek back to the site. There's several different creeks. Back behind the tree line, with only the sound of the rushing water, we found the place.
So this is the spot where Gabby's body was discovered, right here in between these trees. You can see there's this stone cross. This is the cross that Gabby's stepdad created here when he visited the site where her body was found. Gabby's van was parked about 1,000 feet that way on the other side of all of those creeks.
So, Brian, just those rocks and stones with messages, you cannot miss those. They are new. We didn't see them when we saw the original stone cross laid by Jim Schmidt, Gabby's stepdad. Where did they come from? Who laid them? What are the messages?
So there are a number of them. Rest in peace, Gabby. There were some letters etched into a tree right there. And that is that cross where Gabby's stepdad, you know, left the stones. That is the spot where her body was. But the other interesting thing is there are other stone crosses that have popped up all in that area, like right near the van. There were a couple more, and then there was another one right by the river. So it was a bit confusing, honestly, when we got there, because I was looking for that one spot and I knew that wasn't it. But yeah, there are some messages, and people have clearly found the spot that want to go out and, you know, and sort of remember Gabby there.
I just honestly can't believe that you could find it. 1,000 feet in any slight, you know, variation of direction can be a long way away. And the fact that everyone else has been able to find that very same spot. And you know what? Her dad was right to say it's a beautiful area for her to rest in peace. It's still tragic and upsetting to see it, though. Hey, Brian, amazing work. Just fantastic work. Thank you so much for all of this.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. I just want to say, just lastly, you know, being out there, I was thinking of Gabby's parents and what you mentioned. I mean, such a horrible ending to Gabby's life there, but it is such a beautiful place. And Gabby loved nature, and, you know, hopefully that can at least bring her parents some peace.
It's very kind of you to button with that. Thank you. Brian Enten again with his cameraman, Luis, just doing incredible work. They barely slept, so... there'll be something in your Christmas stocking, Brian. Thank you. All right, we're going to let him finally get some sleep. And then coming up, we're going to shift a little bit here. How tough is it going to be to get answers about that fatal shooting inside that church on the movie set of the Alec Baldwin film? Because 1 week out, not everyone is talking. Going to explain that next with the sheriff. He joins me live. It's been only a week since the catastrophic fatal shooting on the set of the Alec Baldwin film Rust. Cinematographer Helena Hutchins was killed. Director Joel Souza was wounded. Warrants have been executed. Witnesses questioned. But as of yet, no charges. The man who will be instrumental in how all of this plays out is the Santa Fe County Sheriff, Adan Mendoza, who joins me now live. Sheriff, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. First question, and I think it's an important one. Can you just tell me from your perspective how this case ended up at your actual sheriff's department? Did someone come rushing in the door? Did you go rushing out the door? How did you begin the conversations that you had with, for instance, Alec Baldwin, who we saw in the parking lot quite devastated?
So obviously the location is within the Santa Fe County jurisdiction. We did receive a 911 call. That's how the call was initiated. It was on 911 center recording and had advised that two people had been shot on a movie set. So obviously after we got that information, we responded along with EMS.
But then how did the witnesses get to the sheriff's detachment? Because we saw the pictures of Alec Baldwin, you know, at your office, sort of not the other way around. Did he come in voluntarily? Did you all bring some of the witnesses to the detachment for interviews?
No, I'm not exactly sure how they got here, whether we transported them or whether they voluntarily drove to the office. Once the scene was secure, obviously, once we identified people that were within the scene, and separated them and determined who needed to be interviewed. Arrangements were made for these people to be interviewed at the sheriff's office. And so they made their way here either by personal vehicle or transported by the sheriff's office.
And as I understand, that happened fairly quickly after the shooting itself. And I just want to ask you if Hannah Gutierrez-Reed and Dave Halls and Alec Baldwin, all three of them, came instantly and gave their accounts voluntarily.
That's correct. All three of them cooperated with the investigation, and it happened pretty immediate. Once we identified, obviously, who was within the vicinity and who may have been involved or had some responsibility, we transported them here and they gave initial statements.
So my next question is, in so many investigations, and they're all different, I understand it, gunshot residue tests are done on the hands. Sometimes you actually bag the hands of a suspect to protect them before you can get those tests done. I'm curious to find out if Hannah Gutierrez-Reed's hands were tested for gunshot residue as well as anybody else. Can you tell me if that happened?
That didn't happen. There was many witnesses, and the incident was corroborated by many witnesses that Mr. Baldwin was the person that fired the weapon. I don't think there's any question in reference to that. He's also admitted that he did fire the weapon. So I don't think there was any need to try to determine who actually fired the weapon.
So no other gunshot residue tests were done on anyone else's clothing or hands. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So what I'm curious about is that there is this story that there have been some reckless behavior on set, and that during a lunch break, someone, maybe more than one, may have gone out and done something called plinking, and that is firing off live rounds in all those, you know, very rural areas around the set. And if that had happened, there'd be gunshot residue on those people's hands. So no one ever thought to test anyone else's hands for gunshot residue at the time?
Well, we are aware of the statements that there was possible target practice, that the firearm was discharged prior to the actual incident, and that may be the case. But you know, we haven't confirmed that right now. That's coming in from a lot of different sources, from the media, from different sources. So we're trying to confirm that. And as I've said in the past, if there's anybody that has information in reference to when that happened, where it happened, we would encourage them to contact the sheriff's office.
Sure. But Sheriff, you've asked them, right? Like, you've asked people, was there this reckless gunfire going on outside of the set? And has anyone said no?
There has been just at least one confirmed statement that possibly happened. When that happened, whether they were rehearsing, I'm not sure that it was actually target practice or plinking, as you put it. But we know that that there was, it was possible by one statement, hasn't been confirmed, that this may have happened. Of course, that's a individual statement, and we would like some information that would maybe corroborate that this did happen. And again, if there's anybody out there that can confirm that this happened or where it happened.
So when you say statement, do you mean a statement to you that, yes, I think that may have happened, that reckless behavior out there?
Well, I wouldn't classify as they stated it was reckless. They stated that it was possible, at least one statement that we're aware of that was given to investigators, that the firearm, or I'm not exactly sure if it was this specific firearm that was fired, but that there was some rehearsal that was done.
Were Hannah's pockets, and I've only got a couple seconds left, were Hannah's pockets checked for live bullets?
Hannah's pockets were checked, and I'm not willing to confirm whether or not there were live bullets that were found on her person. Again, there were live ammunition that we suspect that was found within the scene, and I'll hold off from explaining exactly where those were found.
And 10 seconds left. Dave Halls has lawyered up, is not speaking voluntarily now. Is that just a yes or no?
He has lawyered up, and we're hoping that he'll cooperate further in the investigation.
Sheriff, thank you. So much appreciated. And I hope to speak with you again. My appreciation to you and your staff.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching, everyone. See you tomorrow night.